All right, there it is. Crisscross applesauce, 9:40 on a Tuesday. I can only mean one thing. It's time to visit with our friends at salesportstalk.com. And co-hosting the segment, as she does at this time weekly, is Karen Lyle from salesporttalk.com. How are you doing, Karen?
I'm doing great, Rick. And how are you doing?
Not bad. We have a guest who's back with us again. It's Allison Healy, and I love her title, International Yachting Fellowship of Rotarians, San Francisco Fleet Commodore. Allison, welcome back. Cool title, and it's even cooler because I know the U.S. Navy many decades ago got rid of the rank Commodore. I'm glad you guys are still rocking it.
Thank you. It is quite an impressive title, but it does not describe an impressive position. I do my best, but we are a small, although international, organization. It sounds like so much more.
Well, you know, Allison, I guess Commodore was, that title was used in the Navy back more than 100 years ago, and it got adopted by all the yachting community. And when I invited you to take over the role after mine, you know, for the International Yachting Fellowship of Rotarians, we joined 136 fleets around the world. And some of those fleets, actually, when I was Commodore, one of them was the Italian fleet and had a tall ship, a former tall ship, naval tall ship captain, Sergio, who for the America Vespucci. But you've actually served aboard or been as a non-cadet, I guess, these naval tall ships. Allison, can you tell our audience about what a naval tall ship is for representing a country?
Yes, tall ships have two purposes. One is sail training for their graduating class from the Naval Academy, and the purpose is to learn to work as a team. If you think of raising just one of the 30 sails on board Gloria, it generally takes about 20 people to raise one sail. So that's really working in tandem. And then they also learn to do things like celestial navigation, and the whole idea is to understand how to function without machinery or technology should it become necessary. So this is a great opportunity for them to experience this over a period of many months. And then the other purpose, which is very international, is it's an opportunity for them to show their flag, and their mission is one of goodwill and international friendship. In fact, when they enter the United States after World War II, the State Department established a program where they have a blanket entrance to the United States without any immigration. I don't know the technical language, but they don't have to go through immigration. They don't have to have visas. They are welcomed, and that's part of the State Department program to help foster international understanding, literally to build a platform for peace.
We were talking the other day about the Gloria, the tall ship from the Colombian Navy, and we also had a visit from the Mexican Armada tall ship, Cuauhtémoc, which is, it's just the embodiment of Mexican patriotism, the only Aztec ruler to survive the conquistadors. What was it like to visit that amazing ship?
The Cuauhtémoc. Yes.
Did you visit that ship?
Oh, yes. I know it quite well. In fact, my husband circumnavigated with them twice when he was a naval officer. But like Gloria, I have hosted those particular ships many times over the last 25 years, mostly in San Francisco, but also in other ports. And they are sister ships, so they're very similar. But there are differences. They carry a similar complement of crew, approximately 170 people every year.
When you were aboard Gloria, you also sailed with Gloria, but you weren't a cadet. So how did that work?
Well, I think I'm lucky enough to be what would be called special status. I've supported the ship for so long that many of the decision makers are familiar with me, and the captains especially, so they have invited me as an individual. It's not been formal. It's just been a tremendous gratitude on their part to include me. And I'm like you, Karen, I'm always ready to go. So that's my idea of a perfect invite.
When you see when you see these tall ships today, how much are they exactly like, you know, the privations and the challenges of like the Golden Hind, and how much of them have like inboard motors and some of the modern accoutrement like radar and sonar and such things?
That's a really good question, because I don't think it's obvious from afar. They are fully equipped with the most recent equipment, and their engine room is the size of a small apartment. They really have every modern advantage possible, and they do need it, because otherwise they couldn't control the dates that they arrive in a port, for example. This is all scheduled well in advance, like a year, sometimes longer, and they need to know they're going to be there.
I really appreciated your arranging for me to be invited aboard the Gloria, the Colombian tall ship Gloria, when she came. And I had an opportunity to talk to Captain Lara, whom you also know and spent much time with. And he was explaining that when the cadets stand all upon the spars that go up the sails, that they have an order based upon their achievements. Do you know much about how that works?
Well, I know that everything is based on your standing within your class, and so the person who has the best opportunities and the best position in the yards or anywhere else is the person who is the top of the class academically. I also know that on Cuauhtémoc, the way they did it, and perhaps academia is involved as well, but it was just based on height, so that the shortest would be at the top and the tallest would be at the bottom.
You know, it's interesting, too. I think about, like, if an American ship like this, we would say it's just, it's ornamental, it's fantastic, it's like a little, a decoration, a showpiece. But for some of these smaller countries, is it naive to think that maybe in a time of war that, like, the Cuauhtémoc or the Gloria could be a war vessel? Or is there no designation for that?
As far as I know, there's never been a designation, because they actually have the mission of international friendship and understanding, so that they continually travel as opposed to standing at dock waiting for orders for something to happen. However, there was a story just a few years back where the Ecuadorian tall ship Guayas captured some drug runners. And that they just happened to be in the area, and they got the radio call, and they were able to be effective and act as a normal, quote, Navy ship in that situation.
What is the status of the Cuauhtémoc today? Because it hit the bridge in I think, was it Boston a while back, and we talked about that because it was quite an incident. And I understand from Captain Lara that it's now functioning. Is that correct? Do you know?
Yes, I know a lot about it because the captain is actually a very close friend of my husband and myself, and I met him in 99 when he sailed into San Francisco, so I've known him as well for a long time. The ship lost control because of a problem with the motor, and there may have been other issues as well. The full report won't be out still for some time, but they did hit the bridge, and they had to go into two different dry docks in Brooklyn, and the biggest piece was, of course, reconstructing the two masts that were broken. And she departed New York approximately 2 weeks ago and is sailing south now, arriving in Mexico. She's in Mexican waters. I don't know if she's reached her destination in Acapulco or not, but she's fully repaired and functional at this time. Happy to say that.
Do you think
that's wonderful?
Do you think it's kind of, I don't know what the word would be, charming or nostalgic to know that, you know, even at our Naval Academy, and like when my dad was at OCS in Newport, Rhode Island, And these, you know, Colombia, Mexico, they still teach modern day sailors and naval officers the basics of sailing, even though they probably will never serve on a ship that has, you know, a mizzen mast and a jib and a spinnaker and such things.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And part of that picture is that all vessels have the same electronics on board. So the engineering and the navigation and so forth, the radio, all of that is the same on ships that don't have sails. So they are getting that experience. And they generally go for about 6 months to sea, so that's a chunk of time. And regarding the sails, it's not the sails so much that make the experience, I don't think. It's about learning to work as a team and make decisions as a team and not to be an individual. Because if one person decides not to participate in raising the sail, for example, that could be enough to keep the sail from being raised. But maybe there are 19 people standing there trying to do it, and one person is not participating, and that means that they're not going to be successful, whatever they're doing, if they don't have that mutual cooperation at all times.
Karen, we got time for one more question.
Yes, the Coast Guard. Our Coast Guard has a naval tall ship, the Eagle, and I had an opportunity to come with her under the Golden Gate. What was the longest passage that you took on one of these tall ships?
I think the longest passage was from San Francisco to San Diego on board the tall ship Guayas. I was also lucky enough to sail on the Indonesian tall ship from Los Angeles to San Diego, but that was just an overnight trip.
All right. Once again, SailSportTalk.com segment. We've been speaking with International Yachting Fellowship of Rotarian San Francisco Fleet Commodore Allison Healy. Allison, thanks for coming on the show again.
Thank you so much for promoting the tall ships, which need to be known to the world. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
All right. And Karen, we'll talk to you next week.
It will be next Tuesday, indeed, Rick. Back with Rick Tittle.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break and come on back on Sports Byline.